Hello, good day to you. Welcome back to the Bernie Miklas Show here on my YouTube channel. And I hope you had a great weekend and welcome to the new week. I'll keep the Cardinal stuff coming. Jump in on some other things if I get a chance. Thanks for all your support. Thank you for subscribing. Please get the word out. Hit the like button and leave me your comments. I was not very good over the weekend responding to your comments. Just busy, really busy. And sometimes, believe it or not, as much as I enjoy interacting, I really do. There are times where I just kind of want to shut it down for no reason, just like anybody else. You just want to kind of watch college football all day Saturday and do your thing on Sunday. So anyway, enough about that. All right, I want to talk about something today because as I'm looking ahead to what an interesting offseason it'll be for the Cardinals. And there's a lot that we don't know yet, like who, you know, how many people are they going to trade off? How severe will the payroll cuts be? Or will some guys not return because of trades? Paul Goldschmidt leaving as a free agent, you know, that type of thing. We just have no idea. So we're operating in the dark to an extent. But the one person who I think is in a really fascinating situation, very intriguing situation, if you ask me, is the Cardinals manager, Ali Marmol, because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that he's a popular guy because he's not. Do I think some of the criticism of him is unfair? Yeah, that's just my opinion. Do I think that all things considered, he did a good job last season? Yeah. I mean, his record based on run differential should have been under 10 games under 500. Instead, they were 83-79. Also excellent in one-run games, 29-22. He had the same record as Craig Counsell, and based on the way the Cubs' run differential went, I mean, Craig Counsell and the Cubs should have been, oh, I don't know. I've used this before. The Cubs should have been 88-74, and instead they had the same record as the Cardinals. So my point is, I find trying to evaluate him frustrating because it really doesn't matter if I come up with some things that are fair and accurate about some of the positive things. There are so many people who just can't stand him. Some of you watching this, listen, you can dislike whoever you want to dislike. I mean, it's your opinion, right? But my point is it's kind of tough for me to actually have an objective evaluation of them because people, you know, kind of lose their minds a little bit anyway. So it's kind of tough that way. But I've always, you know, thinking about the season a little bit, I always wonder about something. Let's see. So you had one of the worst run differentials in the majors. In the National League, your offense was 12th in runs, 12th in homers, 11th in slugging. 10th in OPS, of course, terrible bottom of the league in batting average, runners in scoring position, slugging, with IRSP, last in home runs and runners in scoring position, last in OPS, 12th in stolen bases in the National League. So you had a well below average offense. And then if you looked at the pitching overall, you know, the Cardinals overall ranked 8th in the National League in ERA. Starting pitching was 11th. We all agreed that the bullpen was good. The one thing we don't agree on is how much credit Marmol should get for that. I think he should get a lot of credit for it. And I've been through this a bunch, so I'm not going to do it again, but all the stats back that up. It was the strength of the team. He did a really good job of just handling it, including keeping pitchers healthy like Ryan Helsley. You know, I look at the Cardinals, like their strikeout rate as a staff, not very good at all. So the defense was above average. The base running in terms of extra bases taken as a runner, you know, like you go from first to third on a single, that kind of thing. They actually did really well in that area. They were third best in baseball. So the base running was pretty sharp. Not great, but pretty sharp as far as being alert and opportunistic. They don't steal a lot of bases because they're not very athletic and they don't have a lot of speed. And I've said this before. I don't know what the point is. You want people to like run and steal bases. when the probability of success probably is rather limited, even with the new rules. So anyway, not here to relitigate that. I'm just pointing out that all things considered, I thought 83-79 is better than they should have been. That's all. And again, I realize it's about making the playoffs and winning playoff rounds and winning pennants and getting to a World Series and all that. I realize that. I haven't changed the standards. Just you kind of got to look at it basically from what kind of team did they have. I mean, everybody thinks that the president of baseball operations has done a lot of lousy job putting a roster together, you know, things like that. So if the offense is substandard and you fired the hitting coach and the pitching in terms of overall ERA, starting pitching, average-ish, maybe slightly below average. So we don't like the roster. We don't like the spending. We think the payroll is too low. We think the president of baseball operations is bad. We question the ownership management commitment to winning. We look at where various categories, as I just talked about, the way they performed. So I guess I get a little confused as to why we would have expected more than 83 wins. I don't know. Pardon me, but it sort of doesn't add up. If anything, they outperform their own numbers. But that's not really why I wanted to talk today. I got into that a little more deeply than I wanted to. Let's get to the good stuff. What's intriguing about Marmol's situation is that the guy who ultimately will make the decision about his future after 2025 is Chaim Bloom. We do not know how to read Chaim Bloom on these things because we can't. There's just nothing there in terms of evidence. I don't know if Chaim Bloom likes Marmol in terms of a manager. I don't know if Chaim Bloom has reservations. I don't know whether Chaim Bloom is kind of in like, well, let's just see how he handles which is going to be a very challenging year for a manager in this situation. Let's just wait and see. I would think it's probably along the lines of let's wait and see, right? I don't know that for a fact because, again, Chaim Bloom ain't going to be talking about the manager. You ain't going to hear him talk about the manager at all, period, until he becomes president of baseball operation. And even then, I'm not sure what he's going to say, and I'm not sure if he's going to keep him or remove him or how soon the decision would be made. We have to wait. But it's an intriguing situation because Chaim Bloom is unknown in terms of his thoughts on the manager that they have. And Marmol does have a contract for 2026, but for the Cardinals to fire him after 2025 certainly would not be out of line. It certainly would not be something where it's like, oh, he's got a year left. They're going to eat that. Yeah, they're going to eat it. If you want to get rid of the manager 1 year, you know, you pay him off his final year. It doesn't matter. It's just not a big deal. But one of the reasons why it's so intriguing, in addition to the Chaim Bloom factor and what is he thinking, is that I don't know what the criteria is, right? None of us know. If we're all trying to just look at this objectively, like trying to put your personal feelings aside a little bit, whether you think Marmol's great, you think he's awful, you think he's somewhere in the middle, there's no need to just kind of like lay that part out. What I wanted to lay out, and I'm going to get to the good stuff later because he's basically surrounded by all kinds of potential managers, guys that are going to replace him potentially, which makes it kind of a juicy subplot, right? More on that in a moment. But what are the expectations? What are the ground rules, so to speak? Number one, like, for example, how severe will the pay cuts be? How many notable players will be traded? Trade candidates, as we've all discussed, Ryan Helsley, Sonny Gray, Wilson Contreras, Nolan Arenado. Paul Goldschmidt's going to leave as a free agent. You have Eric Fetty. Did they see what they could get for him? He's got a full year. This is tough to say what the expectations should be. What are the reasonable expectations? Very tough to set them now because we don't know what the roster will look like on opening day. We don't know how many people will be leaving, traded. We don't know if they're going to spend much money just to bring in people, maybe to give them a stronger bench, maybe to give them some role players, a platoon bat, more bullpen depth. So what are they going to add from the outside? That's also another question. We know that they're going to play, they're committed to playing younger hitters and younger, giving younger pitchers a chance. We know all that. But in addition to that, how much, if anything meaningful, will they add to the roster for 2025? That would help shape our expectations and the ground rules about what we consider to be a good result. Now, some of you are going to do the usual thing. Well, that's when they win the World Series. I don't care. Come on. I don't say that you're wrong, but I'm just saying it's a little silly to hold that standard against the 2025 team, all of them. Not just the manager, but all of them. They're not capable of winning a World Series. So why would you say, well, that's the criteria? In general, that should always be the criteria, but not when you're entering a rebuilding phase, right? So I would just say, kind of politely, please get off that, at least for 2025, because it's not realistic. It's just kind of silly. To like set that, well, it's either that or forget about it. It's a failure. There are times when it's a failure. 2022 was a failure. That team, and now Ali Marmol blew it in game one against Philadelphia. That team had what it took to actually, when you consider the trade acquisitions of Montgomery and Quintana and how well they pitched, the year that Pujols had, Goldschmidt was the MVP. Arenado was the number three guy. Donovan was terrific. Nolan Gorman really helped them out when he came up from the minors. You know, there were other young players that helped them out. And, you know, they had a team that could have and should have gone on a run in the postseason. That's what I'm talking about. That team was capable of doing that, and they fell woefully short. I criticized Marmol and that team a lot, and I'm talking withering criticism. But that was 2022. That's with Adam Wainwright having his final good season as a major league pitcher, you know, on and on and on. The conditions were favorable and they blew it. Absolutely. No excuses. But the 2025 team ain't like that, right? That's what I'm saying. That's my point. So how will Bloom specifically evaluate Marmol's performance on the job in 2025? Is it based on wins? I don't know. If it would be based on wins, it might be based on the fact that the Marmol and the Cardinals won more than people expected. If they do that, I don't know. Again, how can we say that today? We can't. Is it based on how much that the manager realistically squeezes out of a roster during a transitional year, rebuilding year, restructuring year, but with players who were part of your core, at least some of them traded away. But if you're Heim Bloom, you're going to say, okay, these are not easy circumstances. Let's see what he does with it. You know, if you win more than even your own front office thinks, does that mean that Heim Bloom would think about keeping them? We all know, at least based on the feedback I get, Marmol is bad for business because he's not popular, period. He's got the John Mozeliak stain. And as long as Mozeliak's there, who in not in the literal sense is hated, that hate, as I've said a million times, will be also transferred over to Marmol. It's not fair to Marmol, but hey, life in a big city. What are you going to do? But if he's bad for business and they realize we just need to start fresh. This is all this kind of leftover. There's all this residue from people being mad about, Mozeliak and the way this thing went downhill. And they're bringing in a new executive to run the things. We got a new minor league guy, player development guy. You know, there's a lot of good things, but that's a good way. Let's just make a clean break from this immediate past, which means we already know Mo's going to step down after the year. And then Marmol could be just part of that, hey, clean start philosophy. But even though if Marmol might be bad for business, and the fact that there is at least a percentage of the fan base, I can't estimate. His critics are louder than the people that like him, right? That's just the way it goes in everything. It's no big deal. But if he's not popular, and yet the 2025 team, I'm just giving a theoretical scenario, if that 2025 team wins a lot more than people think, and if the young players thrive, if the young pitchers that are given an opportunity, if they thrive, if they do well, they do better than we think, and they play exciting ball, and it's just sort of like, well, yeah, we know it's this is not a team that's going to go to the playoffs, or it's not a team that's capable, even if they would sneak out some type of wild card berth, they're not going to go anywhere. But what happens if they play well and you see the young guys getting better and getting better, young pitchers coming along, doing well, and the team plays clean baseball, exciting baseball, they make things happen, that type of thing. The energy be really high. Well, if I'm just giving you different scenarios, in that scenario, should it really be held against Marmol because he's not popular? Would his popularity increase in 2025 with the public, with the consumers, if they do play better than we think they're going to play, or they win more than we think they're going to do, or we like their style of ball, and we see the young guys getting better, pitchers, hitters, whatever, right? Would it be fair to fire him under those circumstances? If the young players flop, if they continue to stay where they are and they don't get better, if they get worse, if the Cardinals are a sloppy team, if there are issues in the clubhouse, let's say, and the expected improvement through extensive playing time doesn't trigger a better performance from the younger players they want to take a long look at. If they can't get Jordan Walker going, if they can't get Nolan Gorman going, if they can't get Victor Scott to graduate to the point where Victor Scott's like, you know what? Yeah, boy, he's gotten better. He worked hard. He's going to be our starting center fielder. And what if Victor Scott has a really good year, maybe sooner than expected? But if he flops, and I mentioned Walker flops, Gorman flops, Burleson doesn't build on 2024, and he disappoints in 2025. Some of the pitchers that showed some promise in 2024, they fall back. Well, then it's an easy decision. I mean, that's a very easy decision, because what's on the field, and you look at player by player, and the trends are negative and the trends are not positive. Well, there's not a lot to discuss the way I see it. And if Chaim Bloom wants to get off to a horrible start with Cardinals fans, probably the worst thing he can do is keep Marmol in general. But if Marmol and the Cardinals have a bad season, I don't think Chaim Bloom's got, I'm sure he's a guy that thinks for himself and's got his own opinions. He's not afraid of anything, but I don't think he'd have the guts to do that, because actually, even if the Cardinals wildly exceed expectations in 2025 and Marmol's really done enough to keep his job, it won't matter. People going to hate on Chaim Bloom just for keeping him, right? So Chaim Bloom's in a rough spot here, but he knew what he was signing on for as well. The other thing that makes this interesting, as I alluded to, see, I'm saving the best for last, is that, Marmol is surrounded by potential replacements. And we'll just go through it real quick. I mean, Daniel Descalzo is the bench coach. He's really good. I think he played a role in helping the team improve last year. Daniel Descalzo doesn't fix hitters. We'll see who can fix these hitters, right? Is it talent or is it coaching? Well, Turner Ward took the fall for this past season, which I completely thought was justified because their approach was so stupid. But Daniel Descalzo is a really good baseball man. And I know the one thing he does for sure is that all bench coaches do this. It's part of their job. They they good bench coaches have to get on the players and stay on the players and make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do and putting into it what they're supposed to be putting into it. Isn't that the manager's job? Well, yeah, but we've been through this a lot. The manager's not the only one who – this is why you have coaches. This is why you have bench coaches. There used to be a time not all that long ago where you didn't have bench coaches. And one of the jobs of the bench coaches is to make sure, you know, he's going to players sort of preemptively say, hey, listen, man, we don't like the way you're doing this. We know you can do better. That way the manager doesn't always have to be in the players' faces. The bench coach takes on some of that responsibility. And it's not just in St. Louis. It's everywhere that's how it works. Just like we've been through this a million times too. Tony La Russa empowered his own players to police the clubhouse. And a few of you, I love you, but a few of you were just thinking, that's like the craziest thing I've ever heard of. The manager's got to run the clubhouse. No, he doesn't. He does to the extent that he's ultimately responsible. But Tony La Russa believes if you have a big-time culture, you have the culture you want, a winning culture, the manager doesn't have to go in there screaming at people because the players take it upon themselves to be the patrolmen, to be the cops on the beat. In a lot of ways, it's much more impactful and effective when a player goes to another player and says, like, hey, dude, why didn't you run that ball out? What's up? We don't do that here, okay? That's actually more effective because that kind of peer pressure really, you know, guys get called out by like a Pujols or a Molina or a Wainwright or a Scott Rowland or a Jim Edmonds or whomever, right? That's pretty effective. That'll get your attention. Because among other things, even if you don't like the manager, whoever the manager is, you don't want to feel like you're letting your teammates down or that they don't respect you. That stuff's very meaningful in a clubhouse. So Descalzo's Joe McEwing, wonderful guy. He was not wired to do the job of a true bench coach as far as quietly going to players and saying, listen, Bubba, we have higher standards than this. So I'm just going to talk to you about it once right now. You know what you need to do, okay? Descalzo is really good at that. So, and Descalzo will be a big league manager. I would think, you know, after next season, even he would get some interviews. He's worked in front offices. He's worked in terms of like going around the minor leagues. I'm talking about previously before coming back to the Cardinals. And he's a Tony La Russa guy. So if you want to know how he's wired, this is a TLR acolyte. Descalzo is one of his favorite players, Tony La Russa. So then you bring in John Jay. And this wasn't some situation where the Cardinals were like, oh, see, they got to go hire a former Cardinal. No, they hired John Jay because he's a really good young coach. He's an up-and-comer. He's highly thought of within the industry. He had other opportunities to go coach somewhere else for 2025, but he wanted to come here. He wanted to help Ollie Marmol. He wanted to help the Cardinals. The Cardinals are very dear to him. The idea of working with young players appeals to him. He's a teacher. He's an instructor. He's another guy, absolutely, who will go to players and hold them accountable. And so now you have all of a sudden you have, you know, in addition to Marmol and all the things he has to do, you've got two strong leaders on your coaching staff, guys who represent the Tony La Russa standards, in my opinion. Right. And I think that's really important to have that element. Now they've just kind of doubled up on that because they have Descalzo and Jay, and both of these guys are going to be managers in the big leagues. I don't know when. But John Jay, as I said, he's kind of a rising coaching star, and he has a chance to even improve his stock more if he can help the Cardinals get better, these young players, if he can help the Cardinals win more games. Then you have Skip Schumacher hanging out there. I've been monitoring managerial things, and, you know, he's not even on the White Sox radar. I think, if anything, I'm just guessing, he probably told him he wasn't interested. So he's out there. I may have missed something. And if I did, don't get mad at me because I try to stay on top of everything that's going on around all 30 teams, but it's not easy, right? But Skip Schumacher, who knows? He may sit out a year thinking that you know, he kind of gets time to reconnect with his family, freshen up a little bit. The Miami thing last year was pretty brutal experience for him. And then maybe he'll have better job offers or better jobs will come open after 2025. One of those jobs could be in St. Louis. And Skip Schumacher was going to be, if that job comes open, Skip Schumacher absolutely would be an excellent candidate. And it's not because he's a former Cardinal. It's because he led the Miami Marlins to the playoffs in his first season, and he won Manager of the Year award. He's proven that he can do this in the big leagues and do it well. Anybody blames him for what happened in Miami in 2024? How do I do this? Should I use like an unpleasant term, or should I be like Mr. Polite? I'll be polite. I would just say, if you're blaming Skip Schumacher for what happened down there in 24, you are mistaken. How's that? Is that nice enough? You are mistaken. No, no offense, but you are mistaken. I could say some other things. Anyway, and it's almost like, and we talked about this in a previous video, it's almost like this thing is like set up. Like this is a conspiracy theorist dream when it comes to Cardinals manager stuff. Because it's, wait a minute, well, they bring in, you know, Skip Schumacher, they bring in one of his bench coaches, excuse me, they bring in one of his former teammates and good friend and strong compatriot. They bring him in as the bench coach, Descalzo, last season. Now they've added his first base coach, John Jay. He's there, another great friend. They were part of that Memphis Mafia, those minor leaguers, those prospects that came up and really were part of some really great Cardinals teams, even if they were just role players, so to speak. They knew exactly what had to be done, and they were just very, very integral in the culture of that success. So they hired Descalzo, who's tight with Schumacher, and John Jay, who's really tight with Schumacher. And then the Cardinals went to Skip Schumacher for some advice on who to hire as a hitting coach, and because the Cardinals had gotten some good things said to them about Brant Brown, who they ultimately did hire. But Skip Schumacher's recommendation, a glowing recommendation, you can make the case, I don't know this factually, but it's not much of a leap to conclude that Skip Schumacher's recommendation of the new hitting coach, Brant Brown, probably had a lot to do with him getting the job. So it isn't that Brant Brown is going to be a managerial candidate. He's not. But the point is, if you're looking at Schumacher and what could come next, well, right now, if Skip Schumacher is in any way, shape, or form going to be a manager in waiting. Now, look, he could get hired by someone out of the blue in 2 weeks. I don't know. But if it's still – that situation is still in place towards the end of next season, well, Skip Schumacher would already have like three or four pieces of his coaching staff in place already. And that's why I say it's such an interesting scenario. If it holds true, if it holds up, if Schumacher doesn't go to somewhere else to manage between now and then. And then you have, of course, I almost wore my Albert Pujols cap of his team that he's managing in the DR, but I didn't do that today. You got Molina and Pujols in the wind. They both want to manage in the big leagues. And Pujols has been emphatic privately with Cardinals people that he wants to work for the Cardinals. Molina, we think, wants to work for the Cardinals. You know what I think about that? I think Yadier Molina wants to work for the Cardinals, and he wants to manage the Cardinals. He doesn't want to work for John Mozeliak. That's my theory, and I'm going to stick with it, okay? But so you got potential managers all over the place. And, you know, fans of the St. Louis Cardinals, like, they're familiar with all these guys. And I think they respect all these guys. And I think correctly, they would rather have one of these guys get a shot if they're going to change managers than going out there and hiring some recycled hack, right? Spare me. No, they're not going to hire Joe Girardi or Buck Showalter, all right? They're not going to hire Joe Madden. That's all I'm trying to say. When you have really strong potential up-and-coming manager types that are going to get gigs in the big leagues, And you got two of your franchise legends who are also two of the smartest players they've ever had, ever, the St. Louis Cardinals. And they're both leaders. You don't have to go shopping for some recycled hack, okay? If Francona was still out there, different story, but he's not. So I find this fascinating. And one thing about Marmol, you got to say, well, some of you won't. That's all right. I'm beating that to death, and I apologize. Marmol's not, he's unfazed by any of this. He was unfazed last year when all the Molina talk was going on, and then some of the Pujols talk crept in. And, you know, both of those guys making it clear they want to manage. And you know where they want to manage. They want to manage here. Heart and soul, man, this is in their blood. But Marmol led the charge to try to get Yadier Molina to take the job with the Cardinals and actually to be in the dugout. Marmol was his biggest supporter. I asked Ali, I said, well, you know, you realize that you're basically you're endorsing and you're enthusiastically trying to get Molina in here. And as soon as he's hired, people are going to want to kick your rear end out and promote him to manager. So you're basically going to put yourself on a hot seat just because people will want the other guy. You do realize that, right? And he laughed. He said, I don't care. It's all about getting better. People can say what they want. I'm just going to do what I think's best for the Cardinals. He feels the same way about Pujols. I mean, I know that for a fact. He knows what's up with Pujols. Those two guys are very, very close. Marmol and Molina are close. I think Pujols and Marmol are probably closer. And I'm here to tell you, because I know this, if there was a way, not it's too late for this year, but if there was a way where Pujols was free to be on the coaching staff and Molina was free and he really wanted to be on the coaching staff, Ali Marmol would lead the charge to put them on the coaching staff, even though he basically would be bringing in guys that have more stature and are more popular and would cause heartburn for the manager, because as soon as they lose three games in a row, everybody's going to be saying, oh, you got to fire him. Get out of here. You got Yachty here. You got Pujols here. It's all there. Let's go, you know. And that's human nature, and I understand the emotion. I ain't knocking anybody who would feel that way because it's an obvious thing. But Ali Marmol's interesting because he doesn't care. He really, you know, you hear all these coaches. I hate these phony coaches in college football, especially. Our team blocks out all the noise. You know, we do a great job. I tell them, and I know that I do this. I'm talking, one guy like this is Eli Drinkwitz. No, he doesn't block out the noise. He wants to know what everybody's saying about him. But they all claim they block out the noise. No, they don't. I actually think Ali Marmol blocks out most of the noise. I do. Because I've talked with him about it. He understands his unpopularity. I give him a little credit for just saying, look, I can't change the way I'm managing. I got to do what I think is best. And this is not me giving Marmol another endorsement. I'm just trying to explain you what I know from behind the scenes conversations and other conversations. So what are we seeing here? You know, what's going to happen at the end of 2025? I think Marmol's situation, as I mentioned, is very intriguing. And then you have the Heim Bloom Network. And I know I'm going, it's 33 minutes, but I'll try to get into this real quick. You know, yeah, Bloom was in Boston, but he's a Tampa Bay Rays model guy. And there are a lot of managers that have come out of that Tampa Bay coaching staff. Rocco Baldelli, who's won three divisions, going to three postseason with the Minnesota Twins. He was a Tampa Bay coach. Dave Martinez was a Tampa Bay coach when the Nationals hired him. He won the World Series in his second season. Kevin Cash, Bloom was very much involved in the process of elevating him to manager from the coaching staff in Tampa Bay. And in 10 seasons, man, 10 seasons go by quick. Kevin Cash has got the fifth best. The Tampa Bay Rays under Kevin Cash have the fifth best winning percentage in the majors, and they did get to the 2020 World Series. Joe Maddon was an Angels coach, but he went to Tampa as a manager there and then left, and he led the Cubs to the World Series title, of course, in 2016. Gary Shelton, Derek Shelton, the Pirates manager. Listen, the dude has no chance to win there, right? You do get that. He's respected within the game. He comes from that Tampa Bay system. Matt Quattaro, who may be winning manager of the year, or he'll certainly be in the top three in the American League, the Kansas City manager. got him in the playoffs in his second season after losing 106 games the first year, and it, which was the final year of the total rebuild. He gets that team in the playoffs. He was the bench coach in Tampa Bay. So Charlie Montoyo came from the Tampa Bay system of coaches. He had 4 years in Toronto, was about a 500 manager. When he got fired, a lot of people thought it was unfair. I have no horse in the race. I have no idea. So it is interesting. And the other thing is, it's interesting because the Cardinals have a thing about the Cleveland model and the way they do it. I'm not familiar with Cleveland coaches who would be good managers, but I know the way Chaim Bloom thinks, and I'm pretty sure I know that there's mutual respect. The Tampa Bay people really admire the Cleveland people because they both do the same. They both have very small payrolls, and yet they outperform their payrolls incredibly well. So anyway, let me know what you think about this, because I find it really fascinating, and I've given you a lot to chew on. But this was not going to be a 15-minute video because there was a lot of ground to cover. But I appreciate your comments very, very much. And tell us what you think, what you would do. You can say wide fire Momol now, but okay, you can say it. But that's kind of a boring answer because that doesn't really lead to anything. When we unpeel the onion here, like what do you think? I appreciate you very much. Thanks for watching The Bernie Miklas Show.